first of all, thank you to Avichai for hosting. Shkarach to everybody for coming. And tonight we're going to focus, we're going to really think about, hopefully, a practical way of framing tshuva for each one of us in a time that I think you could really say Imlo Achshav Emasai. You know, I find that every year it becomes more and more challenging with so many things going on to really focus and hone in on the avodah of tshuva itself. Elul, we always talk about Elul, and yet I don't know how somehow it just kind of like flies by. And then you have Aseres Mitzvah, but it's not really Aseres Mitzvah because you have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, which we're all busy doing stuff, and then you know you have Shabbos and Tzom Gedalia by the time you turn around. So we're holding right now less than 24 hours a day away from Yom Kippurim. So I want to really focus on an idea, an aspect of tshuva, based on the teaching of Rav Kook, which we will explore together, and then use that as a springboard to focus on some practical aspects, please. Things that we can focus on and build for our own avoda. So we can think about it maybe in the following frame of two questions. The first one begins all the way back at the first story, the beginning of creation and the first mistake. So Adam HaRishon, as we all well know, makes the grave error of eating from the Eitz Hadas. And so this should be for us the model of how we're going to approach Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is the day of tshuva, it's the day of mechila, slicha, kapara, different translations, that's not for tonight. So we look at that and we say, wow, that's a great place to look. Whenever you find a concept in life, it's always good to look at the first place that appears in the Torah, because that sometimes can give you an insight into what the pnimius hadvarim is, what the core, the inside of it is. So Adam HaRishon makes this really bad choice. He eats from the Eitz Hadas, he eats from the Eitz Hadas, and then when the Ribbono Shel Olam comes to them, the Ribbono Shel Olam approaches Adam HaRishon and he says something very strange. He says one word. What does he say to him? Ayeka. And that is very odd. Isn't it odd? Forgetting the whole omniscient thing, that the Ribbono Shel Olam knows everything, and so some of Farshim discussed, maybe he was just trying to make small talk, you know, when you have an awkward situation with somebody, so you don't want to get right to the beef. You're like, hey, so what's going on? How are things? So maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam was making small talk with Adam HaRishon. But even that, why does he ask him, Ayeka, where are you? Why is that the question of the day, when Adam HaRishon just did the worst, like the worst crime that could possibly be committed, because there was only one rule? So why does Hashem Yisbarach say to him, Ayeka, where are you? He could have asked him, how are you? He could have asked him, what's happening? You know, what's the weather like in Gan Eden? I don't know. He could have asked him a lot of things. But he asked him Ayeka, which is a very specific question. And Adam HaRishon has like the most ridiculous, and this is also for a different tshuva discussion about the question of blame. You know, what is the real problem of the chait Adam HaRishon? So many darshanim say it's not that he made the mistake, it's that afterwards he blames somebody else, and then she blames somebody else, and it becomes a whole blame game. But he doesn't really have a great answer for Ayeka, because he says, well, I found out that I wasn't clothed. So that's kind of like a very bizarre, like, he doesn't have a good answer. So what is the story of the chait HaKadmon and that episode tell us about tshuva and about Yom Kippur that's coming in 24 hours? That's issue number one. Issue number two is, it's the name of the holiday that we're about to experience, the name of the Yom HaKadosh. Because if you look in the Tanakh, if you look in the Chumash, it's referred to as Yom HaKippurim. Did we ever ask the question why that was the name of choice? Could have been a lot of other good choices. What could have been? Yom Slicha. Could have been Yom Mechila. Happens to be interesting that the word Mechila doesn't actually appear in the biblical literature. It appears specifically in the Rishon. It doesn't appear in the Chumash. So why is it Yom HaKippurim? What is the meaning of the word L'chaper that's unique to this story of Yom HaKippurim? So to illustrate this, I came across a story recently, which I then went online to do some research, and it is really, it is mamish unbelievable. It was worth, I started subscribing to the Reader's Digest just for things like this. When I came across this story, a maisa shahaya kachaya ad kadei kach, that I found out online that they had oceanographers confirm this emesa maisa with a fisherman whose name was Salvador Alvarenga. Salvador Alvarenga, on November 18th, 2012, he and a friend of his, name is Cordoba, set out on a little fishing trip on the Pacific coast of Mexico. They had a line, they had a radio, they had a 25-foot boat, and they were fishermen, so they went fishing. And they got caught in a huge storm. So they get caught in the storm, and they're tossing and turning, and their boat is getting ripped by huge waves. And they manage to get off an SOS signal, but then the radio gets knocked off, and then the motor dies. And then the motor gets knocked off, everything gets washed into the ocean, except for they have one giant, imagine like a huge ice box where they were going to keep the fish. The line is cut, everything. They wake up 3 days after the storm finally blows over, and they are now 250 miles out into the Pacific Ocean. They have no radio, they have no food, they have nothing but the shredded clothing on their backs and this empty ice chest that was supposed to hold it's just like a box that's supposed to hold the fish. So you ready for this? This guy, Salvador Alvarenga, drifts in the Pacific Ocean for 438 days. He finds himself on, it's unbelievable, January 30th, 2014, he reaches the Ibon Atoll, which is part of the Marshall Islands in the Pacific. He had drifted over 6,000 miles. 438 days. And people, when he got back, they couldn't believe this was an emesa maisa, but they had oceanographers actually plot the fact that it's possible that somebody could be in a 25-foot fishing boat and float from Mexico to the Marshall Islands in 14 months. It's unbelievable. So he describes in the story here, and then you find out online a lot more about his life, that the fellow who was with him, Cordova, after a few months died, and he just buried him at sea. He pushed him into the ocean, and he spent his time trying to catch birds or catch a fish. They couldn't go into the water, obviously, because they were afraid they were going to get eaten by sharks. It's unbelievable. The whole story, it's like crazy, crazy. But what struck me the most is, I don't know if I brought it so you could see it. It's not so easy to see, but I'll show it to you. This is a picture of his boat, if you can see it from far. That's the whole boat. And this is a picture of him. Where is it? Oh, I don't have it in here. If you go online, you can find a picture of him, what he looked like before he went out to sea. He was kind of like a red, like a dark complexion, round face, really a strong, upright guy. And this is a picture, not right when he was rescued, a little while after he was rescued. This is his picture, if you can see it. You pass it around. This is after he got cleaned up. And what struck me most about this story when I was looking at this picture is, like, here is a guy. Imagine what he thought. What did he think the first time? Now, when he got to the Marshall Islands, he could hardly walk. And he couldn't speak, of course, to the people there because he only spoke Spanish and they only spoke whatever native language. I've never been to the Marshall Islands. I don't know what they speak. So he had to, like, pantomime to them. He needed a hospital. He couldn't walk. A kitzer. But I wondered to myself, when you look at that picture, you ask yourself, What did he think the first time he saw himself? The man had not seen himself in 438 days. When he left Mexico, he looked like a mensch. And then when he get here, you look in this picture, and this picture is after he's already cleaned up a shtickle. I think to myself, when he looked in the mirror the first time after having been on a boat alone, like half naked, only the clothes on his back that were in tatters, he probably looked at himself and he didn't recognize himself. If you look at this beard, mamash, the guy left, he was totally clean shaven, he leaves Mexico, he comes back, he has, the only way to describe this beard is like in Yiddish, wild. You know, it's like he's been inside of like one of those tunnels. You know, you take the kids to the science center and they have those things that if you pay extra money, you put the kids in the hair dryer without the heat on and it makes a lot of wind. He was in the middle of the Pacific Ocean for over a year. So you can imagine what his face looked like. There's no showers. You can't go in the water even because you could get eaten by sharks. And any clean water that they had, they of course had to trap and drink. So I imagine this man looking at himself and thinking, I don't recognize the guy in the mirror. And I wonder if that story, in a certain sense, is what we could feel like when we come back tomorrow night to Kol Nidre, especially in light of Rosh Hashanah. Right, the Medrash Shulchan Aruch says, Rosh Hashanah is Ori, it's my light. Then the Rebbe Shlom turns on the light, and we look at ourselves in the mirror. And Rav Kook, in this piece, he has something so unbelievable, it's so powerful. He says, Bakashas ha'ani ha'atzmi. Says Rav Kook, Va'ani b'sol ha'gola. What does it mean, ani b'sol ha'gola? So he's paraphrasing, he's quoting actually, from the first pasuk in the book of, anybody know? What book is this? Which prophet prophesied from the Golos? Yechezkel, that's right. The first pasuk in Yechezkel says, I am b'sol ha'gola. Says Rav Kook, what Yechezkel is telling us is, Ho ani hapnimi ha'atzmi. The ani, the inner, the essential ani, shel hayachid v'shel hatzibur, of the individual and of the community. Eino mizgale, it's not revealed, b'sochiyuso, rak lefi erech hakadusha v'tahara shelo. Myself, who I really am, is only revealed through to the extent of which I am a holy and pure person. Lefi erech hagavura ha'elyona, of my higher strength, of my core spirituality, hasfuga me'ora ha'tahora shel ziv ma'ila, shehimis ha'levis b'kirbo. So what happens? Fourth line. Chatanu em avosenu. We made mistakes along with our parents. Chata Adam harishon. What was Adam harishon's chait? Shenisnaker laatzmiyuso. What does lehisnaker mean? It means to become estranged. His was nisnaker. He was estranged from himself, from his true self. Unbelievably deep idea. Zana, what does it mean? Shepana ledaito shel nachash, that he turned to the opinion of the nachash ve'ibed es atzmo. When Adam Arishon listens to the nachash and eats from the fruit, he didn't disobey God. Of course he did. But he lost himself. He lost his inner compass, says Rav Kook. Such an amazing idea. And therefore he says, Lo yoda lahashiv tshuva berura al shelas ayeka, mipnei shelo yoda nafsho. He didn't know how to answer the question, ayeka, where are you? Because he didn't know himself anymore. Mipnei sho ha'anios ha'amitis nev damimenu b'chit ha'ishtachavo le'elzar. Because he lost his true self by bowing, by prostrating himself to a foreign god. God says to him, Ayeka, it's almost like, according to Rav Kook, it's like a contraction. Ayeka is Eifo Ha'ani Shelcha. Where's your sense of self? And Adam Rishon says, I don't even know anymore. And Rav Kook describes, as he continues, Chata Yisrael, Chata Haaretz. And then we have a further problem, because look on the next paragraph. So then teachers come along, and they look at the outside. Then people try to get us back on track, but they're not looking at the ani either, they're looking at the outside. Says Rav Kook, there are teachers and leaders and rabbis who only make it worse. Because instead of talking about the ani that's lost, they're talking about stuff on the chitzonius. Look at the last two lines on the right-hand column. The ha'ani holech u'mishtakeach. The ani of a person continues and it's forgotten even more. The kevon she'ein ani, since there's no more ani, ein hu. There's no more he. V'kal v'chomer she'ein ata. You can't have a relationship with anyone else, not in the third person and certainly not in second person, if you don't have a sense of self, if you don't know who you are. And that's really the saddest truth when we think about tshuva. When we look at the list of al-chaits, it's like a mirror. And we ask ourselves, are we really that person who did all those things? We say, no, that's not me. And it's sad to think about. We can't see ourselves when we look in the mirror. We used to be clean-shaven. Well, some of us used to be clean-shaven. And now we look like we have wild, bushy beards that have been lost at sea. And all we're looking for, all we're supposed to be accomplishing, is to keep track of our ani. You know the old story with the Rebbe Reb Zusha. You know, the Rebbe Reb Zusha was the brother of the Melech of Lezhensk, and the two of them were great, the holiest tzaddikim. And they went for a while, they went on a trip. They were exiled for several years by themselves among the people just to really connect with Golos. So at the end of his life, the Rebbe Reb Zusha of Anapol is crying. And his chassidim, the disciples, ask him, they say, Rebbe, why are you crying? So the famous story, Reb Zusha says to them, you know why I'm crying? Because I'm going to the next world. But they're not going to ask me why I wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu, and why I wasn't Aaron HaKohen. What are they going to ask me? That's it, why I wasn't Zusha. They're going to ask me Ayeka. Rav Kook says the Rebbe Shlomo asks each one of us on Yom Kippur, Ayeka. And we don't necessarily have a good answer. We're trying to be ourselves, but we got lost. We got lost on the journey. So what do we need to do? Says Rav Kook on the top left. Ruach apeinu Mashiach Hashem. That spirit of the Ribono Shel Olam. Zeu gvuraso hadar godlo. Einenu mibachutz lanu. The Ruach apeinu Mashiach Hashem. That's not on the outside. Ruach apeinu hu. It's the spirit of our nostrils, meaning as Hashem Elokeinu v'David Malkeinu Nevakesh. You want to look for the Ribono Shel Olam? El Hashem ve'el tuvo nefached, es ha'ani shalonu nevakesh. Let's find out who we are. Es atzmeinu nevakesh. Seek and find ourselves. V'nimtza. Haser kol Elohei nechar, haser kol zaru mamzer. Remove all the foreign identities, all the masks. V'yedatem ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, avutzi eschem eretz Mitzrayim liyosachel Elokeim ani Hashem. That's the job. The job is to find ourselves. There was a great and extremely austere Hasidic master. His name was Rav Menachem Mendel Morgenstern of Kotsk. So a man once came from Lublin to Kotsk, and he figured he's going to come to Kotsk because he wants to learn about Yiddishkeit, he wants to learn the Derech Avoda of the Holy Kotsker. So he comes, he's hanging around the base medrash of the Kotsker, and the Kotsker was mamish, she was like fire. You know, the Kotsker was so sharp that at a certain point he closed himself off from the Hasidim and didn't speak to them. He secluded himself for many years at the end of his life. He was very, very sharp. So this man was hanging around the Beis Medrash. He was learning and he figures he'll have his chance to get an audience with the Rebbe, with the Kotsker. So finally one day comes his turn. He knocks on the door. He meets the Kotsker in his study. The Kotsker looks up at him. So he says, who are you? So he says, I'm Ploni Almoni. He says, what are you doing here? He says, well, I came to Kotsk, I wanted to learn, I wanted to follow the Derech Avodah, I wanted to connect to Hashem Yisbarach. So the Kotsker kind of puts his head like this and looks at the guy and says, get out. He says, get out. He says, you want to find God? Don't waste my time. I got plenty of people here. I don't need you. And if you want to find God, go back to Lublin. There are a lot of people in Lublin who can help you how to find God. The guy's like, well, I heard that. He's thinking in his mind, he's like, I knew that the Kotzker was intense, but like, I didn't expect this. So he starts like moving his chair to get up. The Kotzker says, but if you want to find yourself, maybe we can help you. And Kotzker, we're not just about finding God, we're finding out ourselves. Because it's a big avoda. That's the avoda of Kotzker. Because when a person spends 438 days on a fishing boat alone in the Pacific, so they develop all kinds of, you know, schmutz. Who knows what you can look like after 430 days out, lost. When the ani gets so lost over the course of the year, imagine the dirt and the, you know, who knows what's growing in that beard. It's crazy. We don't look the same that we did. So we have to scrape it away. What do we look like now? Well, the Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, Al teruni she'ani shechar choresh she'eshezafas li'ashemesh. Don't look at me now. You know, I used to look very fine and nice, and now I don't look exactly the way I used to look because I kind of got lost. Now I'm caked with dirt. She'ani shechar choresh. So we have to remove the dirt. The avod of tshuva, to get down to ourselves, is to scrape away all of that that sits on the outside, all that stuff that we've collected over the course of the year. So there's an unbelievable comment of the Ksav HaKabbalah. The Ksav HaKabbalah was written by a great German commentator, a great Rav. His name was Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. So the Ksav HaKabbalah says, you know what the word Kippurim means? Lechaper. Yes, he says, it does mean to forgo. But he has another translation. He quotes a Rashi in Yeshayahu on the pasuk v'chupa brischem es moves kol kaparsha kapara loshon siluk davar. Lechaper means to remove. And now I understand it so much better. The avoda of Kippurim is to remove all of the stuff that has accumulated on us, on our neshamas, on our anis, over the last whole year. So it's Yom Kippurim. It's the day when the Ribbono Shel Olam scrubs us off. Right? Mikveh Yisrael Hashem. It's like being immersed in the car wash. What happens? It's a big Chicago thing. I guess it must be the salt and the snow. I don't know. I used to see so many car washes. But it's very good for tshuva because now you know what a car wash really is. Especially when you take the kids. It's one of the very exciting things for kids to go inside the car wash. What happens? Your car is caked with, especially like in the middle of February, there's dirt and it just rained and then it snowed and then it's covered with filth. So you decide, you know, it's going to be a great activity for the afternoon. We're going to take the kids. We'll get the car washed on the way to the library. It's great. So you go in there and you're totally immersed by this gigantic shmata that's banging around. And you go, you know, the soap suds and everything, and the kids are like, wow, it's awesome, it's the best thing ever. Right? It's great. What's that? The neon light. Yeah, you got it, exactly. And then you come out, and taka, there's no schmutz left on the outside of the car. They usually even clean the bottom, and then they take the hair dryer and they blow it down. So, lahavdil, being on Yom Kippur, it's like being inside of a car wash. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam is mechaper, he's scrubbing off all of the outside. That's what it means. Itzumo shel yom is mechaper. Means the essence. That's why, like in the davening, apparently Rav Soloveitchik, it appears in the Rav Soloveitchik Machzor, the Rav was medayik in the vidui. We're going to say in 2 days, the vidui that the Kohen Gadol says. First he says, Ana Hashem, please God. And then the second time around he says, Ana Vashem. So Rav Soloveitchik said, Vashem is meduyak, meaning it is with the name of God that we are mistire. It is by that interaction, by immersing ourselves in the name, meaning the Itzumo Shel Yom, the spirit of Hashem that is suffused throughout the day, that's what's mitahir us. Because it's machaper, meaning it scrapes everything off. And then you get out of the car wash and you look at the car and you're like, oh, I forgot that that's what it looked like before. You look in the mirror, you say, wow, that's what it looks like. That's true tshuva. True tshuva is getting out of the boat and scraping everything off to figuring out who we really were. And I think there are two nafkaminas from that. One is, why vidui is so important. Because you can wonder, why do you have so many vidui, so many alchei, so many ashamnus? And then, by the way, the Rambam points out that it's better, certainly in the silent Shmona Esrei, to add your own, to be mefarid the chet, all the things that we know that aren't listed in the Machzor. You know, various things that... I don't think that Facebook in and of itself is an alchet at all. But maybe there are certain things that happen on Facebook that didn't exist in the time of Chazal that we could probably put alchets for, and some other, all kinds of things that didn't have in those days. So alchet is a very important tool because it's a mirror. We say alchet shechatanu lefanecha b'loshen hara. And then we ask ourselves, we say, is that really ani? Is that me? Am I a gossiper? I'm not a gossiper. I got lost. I was on a boat and we got hit by a storm and now I end up with a ton of lashon hara packed in over here. But that's not ani. That's not really who I am. You know, ba'azos meitzach. Al-chei chachatan ul-fanecha ba'azos meitzach. With brazenness. Am I a brazen person? I'm not a brazen person. That's not ani. I'm a sensitive person. I'm a nitzos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm a spark of godliness. So the person who was driving my car yesterday, who was honking insanely at the guy in front of me when I was trying to get out of the parking lot, that Azus Meitzach, it may have, I did that, but that's not ani. But until you say the vidui, you don't even know that, you don't even recognize that you're lost. The whole challenge that Rav Kook is identifying in this piece, that what you're looking at here from the Orot HaKodesh, which is this compilation of Orot HaKodesh itself, is amazing. These are teachings of Rav Kook that were edited by the Nazir, Rav Kook's great disciple. Because we want to talk about like wild, wind-blown beards, the Nazir is a good description of such. The Nazir put this together. What Rav Kook is saying is so hard sometimes, is because when the Ani is lost, we don't even know where to start. We don't know... Part of the challenge is we don't know what's ani and what's not ani anymore. So vidui is the barometer, it's the litmus test by which we figure out, well, is that ani or is it not? Bezilzel horim umorim. You know, I got carried away. But that's not ani. And so on and so forth. So that's one that's one nafgamina, the vidui. Vidui now helps us. It helps us remind ourselves of who we are as a nitzotz of a spark of godliness, an agent of Hashem, and we're not all the things on that list. That's number one. Number two, the other thing that you find, I think, through this understanding of Rav Kook, of finding ourselves through tshuva and removing all the shmutz that's caked on us through Yom Kippur, is something I think Rabbi Ganak describes in one of his essays on Rav Soloveitchik. I think it's called Ish Yom HaKippurim. Where is it? It's probably in the Machzor. It's probably in the Rav Machzor. I think it's also in another volume, maybe called Memories of a Giant. I forget. It's in maybe more than one place. That was the hesped that he gave. He describes that Rav Soloveitchik would come home after Yom Kippur, and Rabbi Yosef B. Soloveitchik, and he was so ecstatic, he was so excited and happy that he didn't eat. He didn't have a cheshik to eat, apparently. Family describe in Boston that he came home and he would sit at the table singing the Nigunim from Ne'ilah, and he was just so excited, he was so happy that he wasn't hungry. And I ask myself, like, what does that mean? Like, how could he not be hungry? But you understand, imagine somebody had a possession. You know, someone gave you a gift. My grandfather, Olav Shalom, he wore a ring. I imagine if he had given me that ring that he wore. And it's not just a gift that somebody gave you. It's a gift that somebody gave you who loves you, who invests in you. And that gift, it's part of your identity. You really connect with it. And then, because of carelessness, you lost it. You left it somewhere. So of course you're disappointed and you feel broken and you're embarrassed because it's so important to me. How could I just lose that thing that was so important to me? And you obviously can't look that person in the eye. And then how do you feel when you find it?
oh, I'm so happy because I feel like this treasured possession, this ring, it's so much about who I am and my family, my history and myself and my children. I found it. I'm so excited. So imagine if a person lost themselves. They lost their ani. And then they find it. Comes Motzei Yom Kippur. So I understand the Rav was so in touch with the real ani, with what he was as a Tzelem Elokim, as an Oved Hashem, as an Neshama, that the Rav felt in Motzei Yom Kippur, he's back to himself like, wow, nothing could be better than that. How can you be hungry if you're just celebrating the fact that I found myself and I've been lost for 438 days on a raft somewhere? So this is the teaching of Rav Kook, and Rav Kook parallels this. We don't have time to see it tonight. A very similar idea that he writes in Orot HaTshuva, where he says a similar idea of Tshuva HaRoshis, the main Tshuva, is what? Shehi Meira Samach Shakim Miad, that illuminates the dark places. He Sheyoshuv HaAdam El Atzmo, El Shorish Nishmoso, to come back to ourselves. That's the real Tshuva, to the Ani. And it's not easy, because we might not recognize ourselves and we might not know where the Ani is. And what we find as we dig down to get to the Ani, we might find things that aren't so pretty. And it takes a lot of courage, because that stuff could be very buried very deep. But that's the avoda, to figure out who we are. It's Yom HaKippurim. And maybe to close with the opposite, something to think about in terms of tangible, many yeshiva bachrim, people who are Musar aficionados and others, they take a little piece of paper and they write a Kabbalah for Aseres Yimei Tshuva. Something they want to focus on for the next year. And in light of Rav Kook, I was thinking that what a person could really write down during Aseres Yimei Tshuva is finding out and writing down what they think their Ani really looks like. And keeping that for the coming year. And it's kedai to write it down now. My Rebbe Rav Moshe Stav from Keren Yavne used to point this out. He says that in the old days, mariners, they used to navigate based on the stars. But many of them, they would write down a map before they would leave the port. Because once you're out in the middle of the ocean, it's very easy to get lost, to get verblunden based on the, you know, sometimes it's hard. But if you write it before, and then you just follow the stars, you know, I just stick with the plan that I started with. So if we write down our Kabbalahs, our aspirations during Aseres Yimei Tshuva on Erev Yom Kippur, take a little post-it note, stick it inside your tefillin zekel, or put it with your talis, or put it somewhere you'll check once every month or whatever, like when you, I don't know, when you change the oil on your car, and then you come back to it. So then we think about what our ani is. And maybe this year we could think about, in the idea of Rav Kook's Chiddush about ani, the opposite of the ani that we really need to think about, which is sometimes over the course of the year, we've lost our ani and we've replaced it with a pseudo-ani. The pseudo-ani of gaiva, of arrogance. Right? Instead of having a real ani that defines ourselves as a neshama, as a spark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as something that is an emissary of God, now we're looking at an ani that's inflated, that's the chametz, that says, oh, I'm very important. And that breaks down on different levels. The Vilna Gaon tells us that our life, our religious lives, have an aspect that is ben adam la'atzmo, personal, that is your character development. Then there's ben adam la'chavero, between others, and there's ben adam la'makom. So ben adam la'atzmo, when a person has a false sense of self in the wrong direction, they say, ah, I'm an adam chashuv. I'm really a somebody. And the Rambam describes how gaiva, an inflated sense of self, is one of the worst midos that a person can have. If you look at Or HaSadikim, he says it's mamash, the worst. It's the cause of all kinds of catastrophes. And you think about it, both ben adam lachavero and ben adam lamakom. Ben adam lachavero, why do we get into situations with people? So many times these become a something because of the problematic ani, the inflated ani. I'm waiting outside. I expected you would call, or you would invite, or you would text, and how could I not get that? Ani, I'm very chashuv. And that creates a lot of challenges. It doesn't mean that we can control everything around us, but we control how we relate to it. Now, there are a lot of complicated situations in the world, and we only have a certain small circle of influence. But what gets us aggravated, why do we get frustrated? Because our expectations aren't met. I still remember sitting outside of in someone's borrowed car. You know, when I was dating Nechama, sitting in somebody's borrowed car in Midtown, stewing over the fact that it took her, I don't know, remember exactly how many minutes late. It was involved something having to do with ironing and hair, and I don't remember exactly what happened. But if it's, you know, if it's all about ani, I'm waiting, I'm schlepping, I'm, so then that's going to cause a lot of frustration, and that's going to create a lot of tension, and a lot of relationships get broken by that. But if it's recognizing that there's somebody else and maybe there are other things that are going on, it's not all about ani. And then the ani bein adam lamakom, you know, the challenge of davening is really, really profound. But some of that comes from the challenge of ani. You know, we say va'ani sfilasi, I am davening. Rav Kook writes in the Hakdamah to Olas Riyah, my neshama is always davening. So my neshama is always yearning for spirituality, but, you know, it's hard to make time for that. So how do we relate to it? Part of the challenge of davening is that, thank God, many of us are blessed with wonderful parnasa berevach, and we have direct deposit, and we have cell phones, and we have all kinds of things. We feel like we're in control. What do we need? We're not dependent on the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's ani. I did it. What do I know? I didn't need to ask him for anything. It was easy to daven with kavana if you lived in if you lived in Shmojigraj in the year 1800. You didn't have anything to eat anyway, so you may as well daven for food. You may as well. Now, what do you need a daven for? It's waiting for you in the supermarket, and it just goes on the credit card for many of us. For some, that's not so pashut, and we need a daven for them. But for many of us, thank God, we take so much for granted. You know? Now we need to say refa'inu, and we need to think about, okay, maybe my life is good today, but how many people in the neighborhood, they need a serious yeshua, they need a serious refuah? And it comes from the ani, because if it's all about, okay, what am I worried about? So then I can use the Shemona Esrei as a barometer. Do I really care about Binyan Yerushalayim? If I don't care about it, so then the Shemona Esrei is looking me in the eye like a mirror. It's like the Al-Khayt. It's saying, why don't you care about me? Well, your ani obviously doesn't include Israel or Yerushalayim or Simach David or a lot of other things in the Shemona Esrei. The definition of ani is the opportunity that we have in tshuva. To think of ourselves as a chelek elokami mal, not in some inflated way, not in an ani of a narcissistic way, saying that everything is about me, but realizing truly deep down, we are an neshama. We're put here by the Ribbono Shel Olam for a purpose. And if that's our definition of our ani, it changes the way we relate to other people. Because it's not all about me, it's about what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from me in this situation. And it changes my relationship with him, especially in the realm of davening. I'll close with one story of the great Gaon of Volozhin, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. So the Netziv, I think it was the Meshev Davar when he finished the first volume toward the end of his life. So he made a little siyum. You know, the Netziv is one of the greatest Gaonim of all of Eastern Europe. His yeshiva, Volozhin Yeshiva, is the, I guess you could say, the mother of almost all yeshivas today. Neri Yisrael in Baltimore, and Lakewood, Beis Medrash Gavoa, and Chaim Berlin, and Tells, and YU, and Merkez Harav, almost everything comes from Volozhin. So the Netziv made a siyum toward the end of his life when he published, I think it was Meshev Davar. So somebody asked him, why'd you make a siyum now publishing a Meshev Davar? What's the deal? So he said, I'll tell you a story. He said, I was 11 years old. You know, of course, we lived like in one-room house, and I went to a malamed in my little town. And one night, I overheard my parents talking. And I heard my father say to my mother that, you know, this little boy, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, he's not applying himself so much. And I don't think he's going to be so much sliach in learning, so we should probably send him off to be apprenticed as a shoemaker. So he'll have a livelihood. And, you know, he'll finish as a malamed, it'll be an erlich hayiv. And he said, I was sitting in my bed, and I started to cry, and I felt so bad. And I came running into the kitchen, which, if you can imagine, I guess in their house, the kitchen was here, and his bed was probably right there. He says, you know, No, I'm going to try. Give me one more chance. He starts crying to his parents. His father says, all right, fine, so we'll give you one more chance. And the Netziv describes that he spent the rest of his life devoted to assiduous, diligent learning of Torah. And it becomes one of the greatest Rosh Hashivas of all time. He publishes the Hamik Davar, the Hamik Shela, the Meshav Davar. Unbelievable works. So says the Netziv, he says, you know why I'm making a Siyam? Because I know that it's toward the end. After 120 years, I'm going to go up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And imagine if I came to the Ribbono Shel Olam as Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, the shoemaker. And the Ribbono Shel Olam would say to me, welcome to the pearly gates, to the Olam HaEmes. Where is the Meshav Davar? And I would say to him, Master of the Universe, with all due respect, I know you're omniscient, but you have got the wrong man. The Malchum Avos brought you the wrong guy. I'm Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, the shoemaker. I don't know what you're talking about, Meshav Davar. He says, what do you mean, Meshav Davar? God would say to me, you know the great responsum work that you wrote with Shilas and Chuvas to people all over the world, unbelievable sugyas? I'd be like, you have the wrong guy. And he'd say, no. And where's the Hamik She'ela on the She'iltos? No one learned the She'iltos until you. You came and wrote a commentary. Mosad Rav Kook one day is going to publish it, and everyone's going to know about the She'iltos because of you. No one ever learned it. And I would say, I don't know what you're talking about. Says the Netziv, I'm making a Siyam today, because now, after 120 years, when I go to the Olam HaEmes and they ask me, where is the Meshav Davar, I'll be able to say to them, here it is. Where is the Hamik Davar, this unbelievable Pirush on Chumash that is learned around the world? It says, here it is. This is all because I had the opportunity in my life to figure out who I really am. He figured out who his Ani was, and he followed that dream. Now, I don't know how many of us can be the Netziv, but everybody has their own Ani. And that Ani can be something spectacular. Each in our own way. Every person, that's the idea. Ani has a generic quality, a universal quality, as an Eved Hashem, but there are particular qualities, unique strengths that one person has that no one else has. And through the process of tshuva, we can define and figure out and explore and reveal ultimately who that real Ani is. That's the great gift that we have of tshuva, the great gift of Yom HaKippur, removing all of that other stuff that's on top of us. And through that, we can answer the question of Ayeka, and Amir Tzashem will be blessed with a Gemar Chasimah Tova. Shikar.